Hey, welcome back to the Football Diary podcast. I'm joined with Miles today. We're going to look through mainly the Chelsea rebuild and the start of that, because let's face it, they needed a rebuild. Raheem Sterling seems like the biggest piece of the puzzle for Chelsea, with a few of the big names, notably defenders, thankfully linked to Chelsea now. So looks like the wheels are in motion for their rebuild to actually begin. But Miles, let's talk about Sterling, shall we? I mean, it's been rumoured for a while, and it's split opinion a little bit, it's fair to say, whether it's a right move for him, for Chelsea, for City. Who wins out of this move?
It's not surprising that it's split opinion because Raheem Sterling seems to always split opinion. I can't understand why. Sterling is a fantastic player. I think this is an excellent signing as far as Chelsea are concerned, and I think it's a good move for Sterling as well. His game time at Man City was starting to become less and less. Obviously, if they're showing a willingness to sell him, not just sell him, but sell him to a direct rival as well, then maybe it is time that he moves away from City. The real loss here seems to be for Man City. 50 million apparently for a 27-year-old who really that's the prime of his career, you'd imagine. He's very
Absolutely.
experienced in the Premier League. I think he's got over 100 Premier League goals already, which is fantastic. And
Wow.
he's not an out-and-out forward, like centre forward either, is he? So his contribution in that Man City team over the last 7 years has been absolutely incredible. I don't really understand why City are willing to let him go, but I can definitely see why Chelsea have made the move for him.
Yeah, we discussed the position of strength Chelsea are in those forward and wide areas, especially, didn't we? But there's no doubt Sterling's an upgrade on any players they've got in those positions already. So it is a fantastic piece of business. And for what, a reported £50 million or something like that, he's been England's best player for the national team for a good 3 or 4 years now, consistently. So why? Yeah, I just don't understand it. Clearly, he must have had a lot of frustration not playing as much game time in the last couple of years and just forced to move himself. And it's fair to City that they didn't stand in his way really when he wanted to move. But are we going to see more of this from now on, where there's certain players can only ever move to like a top six Premier League team or one of Europe's elite because of, I don't know, the price tag or their wages? Because like you say, it's a strange one. Strengthening Chelsea, who could easily be a direct title rival, you never know. Seems like an odd move, doesn't it?
It is odd. It's something that you see more in Italy than you see in England, where a player will often play for AC, Inter, and Juventus, but perhaps in their career. And it makes sense in England when you think that the wage structure of the Premier League has become so fluctuated that there are only so many clubs that can afford those figures. So you do kind of have to, if you want to shift someone, you have to sell them to a competitor. It almost looks like Man City are bored. And they're thinking, okay, well, we can only strengthen so much. Let's strengthen the teams around us and see if that makes the Premier League more exciting. In one summer, they've sold Jesus to Arsenal. They're selling Sterling to Chelsea and potentially Nathan Ake as well. And it's funny to me because that says that they really want to push through with the idea of Foden being a left winger. Because otherwise, Sterling was the most out-and-out winger they had left, really, along with Riyad Mahrez on the other side. Because although Grealish and Foden occupy those spaces, they also can play behind the striker. And I think maybe Foden would even be more comfortable there. So I think it tells us what Guardiola's plan for next season is. But I think Sterling isn't getting enough credit for what an asset he has been to Man City. 7 years there, 11 trophies. To me, a club that really doesn't have the kind of longevity or history that some Premier League clubs will have. He must be top five City players of all time, maybe.
Well, that's the thing. I've heard some people saying he's like the rung below those Man City greats. The likes of they put Fernandinho up there, Colo Touré, not Colo Touré, not Kovac. Players like that and De Bruyne, obviously they put him on that sort of pedestal. But there's a few fans saying, yeah, Sterling's kind of just below that. He wasn't quite setting the world alight for us. And again, that blows my mind because I think he's done fantastic things with City, and so much of their success comes down what he contributed as well, as much of any of all the other players that I've just mentioned. So, yeah, a bit of an odd one. Maybe it's a case of balancing the books a little bit for City.
Perhaps, yeah, but I think that's completely wrong, the idea that he's a level below those players. I think one of the reasons that he might be seen as that is because his time at City has now come to an end at 27. Whereas Aguero was kind of the end of his career, Fernandinho's finishing his career off, Yaya Toure finished his career. Sterling, it seems bizarre that Sterling is only 27 still, by the way. He's been around for so long. 7 years at Man City, a couple of years at Liverpool before that as well. He feels like he's just been such a household name. And that's what Chelsea are now getting. And he's undoubtedly an improvement on what Chelsea have already got in the wide areas.
Yeah.
We'll come on to a bit more of the business that Chelsea are doing, I'm sure. But if you consider that Hakim Ziyech looks like he's on his way out, Timo Werner may have to play more centrally with Lukaku going. Pulisic is kind of flirting with the idea of leaving as well. There's been a few clubs lining him up. Hudson-Odoi has had injury problems. They needed a winger. They've missed out on Rafinha. But now they've brought in someone who is of top quality, Premier League experience, has experience of winning trophies, which is an excellent thing to bring to the dressing room. Will already have a connection with the likes of Mason Mount, Ben Chilwell, Reece James from England duty, which I think is another invaluable thing. So it looks like a fantastic sign-in. I'm a bit disappointed by it from a neutral point of view, because obviously there was issues with Sterling and Chelsea in the past where he's had fans racially abusing him and being arrested at Chelsea because of interactions they've had. So I hope that he really hits the ground running, because I do worry that the Chelsea fan base will make him a very easy target if it doesn't work out immediately. Look at how quickly they turned on Lukaku. I'm not saying that that was based on a race thing, but if you've got an issue with a player ongoing already, if he doesn't set the world on fire in his first six games, that could be really difficult then for him to settle in. But I don't doubt that Sterling could be a huge success for Chelsea. I think it's a great sign-in.
Well, I think, well, I should hate him as a United fan because he's played for Liverpool and City, but I actually really like him as a player. I think he's such a creative, attacking, very forward-thinking player that's always looking for space, always looking for opportunities. Yeah. And I think he's England's best player. I really do.
Yeah.
And I think if they, if Chelsea are taking him on and trying to sort of integrate him into a new attacking lineup, I'm trying to think who would kind of lose out in that Chelsea front line. Who do you think's in danger for Chelsea with Sterling's arrival, and how do you think he'd fit in?
Well, yeah, like I say, obviously Ziyech looks like he's on his way out anyway, so that fills up one, that clears one space for him. Lukaku's obviously gone, so if you're looking at a fluid front three between Timo Werner or Kai Havertz and then Sterling, I think that's quite good, really, because Sterling will play down through the middle as well and occupy those spaces if necessary. Mason Mount obviously can drift out to that left as well, so they'll link up well, I imagine, if he was featuring on the left-hand side. But I think that's the benefit of signing Sterling. Where does he fit in this Chelsea team? Well, anywhere you want him, really. He's played under Guardiola, let's remember. So tactically, he will have developed so much by this sort of age. I'm really interested to see how he then adapts to Thomas Tuchel, who will expect a lot of him, undoubtedly.
Yeah.
But I think he has something to offer. And also a bit of a point to prove, because even though we're talking about how amazing he's been at Man City, he was never the number one man there. He's never been City's all-star player. There was always limelight on someone else. I look at this Chelsea team now. Who's a better footballer than Raheem Sterling in that Chelsea team? I'm not sure I can find one. Maybe Reece James.
He'll be absolutely the main man going forward, won't he? He'll be the biggest attacking threat. And like you say, at 27, he's at his peak. So I think there's going to be a lot of younger players looking at him for guidance, really, because he's kind of been there. The only thing that's kind of missing is a Champions League trophy for Sterling, isn't it? So that's weird that a few of the Chelsea players have already got one. And they're looking up to someone like Sterling who hasn't yet had the chance. So, I think there's a lot of shared knowledge there that's going to happen with Chelsea that can only benefit them. And I think someone like Havertz will really benefit from having Sterling alongside him. You know, that's going to be a really, really positive move for them. But, it's a really strange one. And I think Chelsea are starting their rebuild finally, albeit delayed because of the issues they've had. Rumours of, obviously, they're looking at defenders, which we hope they would. They definitely needed to. They've let plenty go. But I'm looking at Koulibaly and thinking, a 31-year-old Koulibaly replacing Rudiger, who was, 29? And they're going to probably pay him a fortune to join as well. Why not just pay Rudiger the contract he wanted to keep him there? Doesn't make much sense to me, that one.
Well, they couldn't at the time, if you remember, because obviously they had the embargo after Roman Abramovich. And I think at that time, his head was turned towards Real Madrid anyway. I actually think Koulibaly is an absolutely outstanding signing. I've seen enough of him over the years to see what a presence he is, how organised he is. He's got such a good defender's brain, and he will really encourage that whole back line. And actually, at 31, I think that's a really good age for him to move to the Premier League, because he's not past his best. He's still got... I mean, look at Thiago Silva, nearly 40 and playing as well as he does in that Chelsea line. He's not lost pace. He's still very physical, but also he now has the experience to communicate within that defensive line really effectively. And he's such a leader and such a presence on the pitch. There's that clip that goes around of him all the time when they were playing. I think it was PSG they were playing. And he just pushes Marco Rui into the right position to mark Mbappe.
Yeah.
He literally throws him there. But that's because he just has that defensive mindset of being able to read the game incredibly well. And I think it's an excellent signing. You're talking, I think, £35 million. Now, Koulibaly has been linked with a move to England for years, but it's always been £70 million. So you've got him at a really good time, I think. And considering Chelsea need centre-backs, are there many better centre-backs on the market that Chelsea could go out and get right now? I'm not sure.
I think in terms of being ready-made, no, probably not. Yeah. And I think they've been linked to Jules Koundé for years now, but he's still not the finished article, is he? He's still very much a work in progress. So, yeah, in that respect, I think Koulibaly has had a few outstanding seasons with Napoli as well. Since he's been in Serie A, he's just grown so much as a defender. Yeah. So maybe now is the right time to finally make a move to England.
I think so. And I think he won't be the only centre-back that joins. Obviously, there's been rumours of Nathan Ake and Presnel Kimpembe. Yeah. And it would be interesting to see Chelsea rebuild a defence pretty much entirely. Ben Chilwell missed most of last season through injury, and he'll be back. Reece James missed portions of last season, but he'll be back. So Tuchel now has this brand new defence to four. And having Koulibaly in the middle of that seems like a great, smart bit of business. I know they've been linked with De Ligt before that, who now looks like he's on his way to Bayern. They've been linked with Koundé. He now somehow, and I think we'll talk about this later, looks like he's going to Barcelona. But Koulibaly, that's business being done is really essential business for Chelsea right now. They need to pick up the pace with those centre-backs in particular, because Chalobah is great. Thiago Silva is nearly 40. They need at least two centre-backs this summer. If one of them is Koulibaly and the other one is Kimpembe, that's good business to me.
Kimpembe is still a bit of a question mark for me, because I don't think he's one of the strongest defenders France have got even. So that still seems like an odd choice. But in terms of experience at the highest level, maybe he's someone to slot right in straight away, and that's what they need, essentially, isn't it?
Yeah, I do think that with Kimpembe, he's got mistakes in him. His temperament is something that I would question. But you have to remember, Tuchel will know him well from his time at PSG. So if Tuchel wants to target him, there's obviously something that he sees in him that he thinks he can get the best out of him. And I actually think his attributes might suit the Premier League, because he's very pacey, and I think he's got really good recovery pace. So if you've got Reece James and Ben Chilwell bombing forward at fullback, it's really important that your centre-backs can cover that space. And that's where Thiago Silva falls short slightly these days. So I think it's a logical move. He's not, again, not necessarily the best centre-back there, but is there a better one on the market? And Chelsea are desperate. That's what it boils down to. He seems a similar sort of profile to what Rudiger was when Rudiger came in. And actually, Rudiger improved at Chelsea massively. He was good at Roma. Do not get me wrong. He was a very good footballer, but never on the cusp of a Real Madrid move. That's obviously come from the time that he's had under Tuchel there. So I think Kimpembe would make sense too.
So a few pieces of the puzzle coming together for Chelsea now, finally. Where do they sit now in terms of challenging? If they get the players that we're talking about, can you see them still maintaining a Premier League title push? Considering obviously City have got Haaland, Calvin Phillips, Julian Alvarez, Liverpool have signed Darwin Nunez and Fabio Carvalho, I think. So are they strong enough to be competing with those squads with the additions they've all made?
I'm not sure they are, if I'm totally honest. I think they still need a lot of work. They've lost so much already. Yeah. And you have to give that new squad time to bed in and gel together. If you think they've already lost Christensen and Rudiger, it looks like Azpilicueta and Alonso will go as well. So there's four senior defenders gone. Obviously, he didn't play a great deal, but Saúl Ñíguez has gone back to Atletico Madrid. So that's another area that they might need some more depth in. Lukaku's gone. Ziyech is going to go. It's a big rebuild that Chelsea need to do right now. And although they're starting to do that, and they've got a few loan players that have come back that could fill that gap, the likes of Conor Gallagher, maybe even Rozier might take Lukaku's spot. Who knows? I don't think Chelsea are as strong as we thought they were at the start of last season at this point, even with those signings. I think that as good as those signings may be, Jorginho and Kante are another year older, Thiago Silva's another year older, and there's so much uncertainty. I worry that actually we could be 6 months away from Tuchel leaving and going, do you know what? This is a nightmare. It's a lot of work at Chelsea this year, and I think they're going to be scrambling towards the end of the window a little bit to fill some more gaps as well.
Yeah, you mentioned Marcos Alonso and Azpilicueta both pretty much certain to leave, it looks like. And I think Barcelona are circling them both. Barcelona seem to be circling pretty much everyone who's available at the minute, don't they? What's the story there? Are they any closer to Lewandowski? So many question marks.
What is the story at Barcelona right now? The first thing that I find hilarious is they are literally just looking at what Chelsea are doing and trying to do it first. So they've obviously brought Christensen in from Chelsea. They're now looking at Azpilicueta and Marcos Alonso. And then most recently this week, they've confirmed Rafinha from Leeds. A minute ago, we were all laughing at Arsenal because Chelsea had poached him from under their noses and got that deal done. And now it's happened to them as well because he just really wanted to go to Barcelona. But there are so many questions to be asked. Yeah. Barcelona are in massive debt, as everyone knows, and I just spent 50 million on a forward. And are talking about spending another 50 million on Lewandowski. There will be a transfer fee for Azpilicueta because he's got another year on his deal. And Chelsea are very demanding of that. They've registered now Frank Kessié and Christensen. How? Because Barcelona seem to be spending the Frenkie de Jong money before they've got it, because they're still dragging their heels on that. They've also now just signed Dembele to another two-year deal, albeit on cut wages, but that's happened. They're trying to sign Gavi to a new contract as well. I do not understand what's happening at Barcelona right now. It just seems like it's ready to implode. It seems like such a pressurized environment that eventually something's going to give, and I don't think it's going to take long if they keep going the way they are. This is a club that has just sold 25% of their future TV rights as well, which is just mental. You want cash now, so you're giving away your income in the future with no guarantee that you actually make any further income or have a big enough increase to settle your books. They've also sold half of their rights to deal with all of their promotions. So that short-term thinking to then buy a 33-year-old Lewandowski when you already have Memphis Depay, Aubameyang, you have Ferran Torres that you've just spent money on, you've just signed Dembele to a new contract, you've just bought Rafinha, and you're still bringing in another forward. Yeah. While you also owe your best midfielder £17 million and are having to sell him to sort something out. But it's okay. We'll talk about Jules Koundé coming in as well. It's disastrous at Barcelona. I have no idea how it's working. Someone there is doing something, because for me, who's not inside the club, it just seems impossible.
It's a strange one. Do you remember the days when Barcelona wouldn't adorn their shirt with a sponsor?
Yeah.
And now they've got the Spotify Camp Nou. And you just think, what are they turning into? It's mad. There's so many commercial avenues they're trying to exploit to get money now. And you can see why they were so desperate to join any kind of Super League, can't you now? Because that cash flow would have just been so vital for them. But you can just see they're still a big team that are drawing players like Lewandowski, despite the fact that they're trying to find money from what seems like thin air. But I've seen an article in The Athletic this week saying how the way they're restructuring their debt and trying to offset it against certain things is enabling them to do this. And it is very short term, and that's the issue. And you talked about implosion and things like that. I think they're kind of banking on commercial success continuing and not stopping. And you've got to admit that Barcelona will always be commercially successful. You know, they'll always bring money in. As long as they can fill their stadium, they will. They've lost a lot of really big players. That's their biggest issue. They're not the biggest team they used to be. Right. They're not the team that has Messi. They're not the team that has one of the greatest players of all time anymore.
Yeah.
So they've treading on very thin ice. And it's sad to see, because you can see them imploding at some point, because this bubble's got to burst. As long as they're playing with this short-term vision, it's always likely to kind of smack them in the face at some point, isn't it?
I mean, it's a different scale, because Barcelona are such a rich club of so much history and such a worldwide reputation. But how many clubs in England have we seen do this? Try and balance debt, try and get money up front, and then just completely fall apart. Look at what happened to Leeds or QPR even. And I know Barcelona are a bigger entity than those two were at that sort of stage. But I can't see a world where Barcelona continue this and still exist in 5 years. That's what Bayern Munich have said to them. If they want Lewandowski, all the money has to be up front because we do not believe you'll exist as a football club soon. And you can understand why. They just don't seem to have a strategy. They're spending all of the money that they're trying to bring in. Rather than covering any debts, they're spending it all on 8 forwards. And it just screams of a lack of a plan. And it would be such a shame because actually, I mentioned all those forwards they've signed. You then have someone like Ansu Fati, who's come through their academy. And at some point, they will be forced to sell him because he is their most sellable asset. They may be forced to try and find a market for Pedri because he's their most sellable asset. And actually, again, then you're not building sustained success. It's ridiculous. And I don't understand the pulling power. As much as there is a history and an incredible aura around Barcelona and the Camp Nou, if I'm Lewandowski and reports everywhere are that Barcelona owe Frenkie de Jong £17 million, why on earth would I want to go and play for them? I'm not going to get paid. I don't trust them. There's no way. Rafinha could have easily stayed in England where he was comfortable, gone to Chelsea, bit of success in England and in a league that he's known. Instead, he's gone, no, I don't really want to go to Barcelona. Why? 10 years ago, completely understand that. Now, I just think that their global brand is taking such a beating right now. Like you say, they've lost all their superstar names. They can't keep hold of Griezmann. Suarez came to an end. Messi left. Neymar left. Now, they're relying on trying to build their own superstars, but that will take a really long time.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, their global brand just diminishes while Real Madrid pick back up. And then all of a sudden, their opportunities for revenue start to get smaller and smaller and smaller. I guarantee if Messi doesn't sign an extension at PSG that they've apparently offered him today, they'll be going back in for Messi next summer just to try and improve their brand again. Yeah. It's bizarre.
It's mad. I think Lewandowski is the one, I think, that would be a really big commercial draw for them because he's still one of the greatest players in the world at the moment. But how much kind of commercial success that's going to bring from one player? It feels like they are putting a lot of eggs in that basket, though. Do you see what I mean?
And I'm not sure that one works the way they think it does because you're right, he's one of the world's best players. But is Lewandowski a global brand in the way that Messi or Neymar were? Because
no, but who is though? Who is that they could afford and who's willing?
Well, I'll be honest, I'm really surprised that we've not seen Barcelona's name mentioned with all the stuff that's going on with Ronaldo. Because I just that seems to be what they're trying to do at the moment. And if they can't get Lewandowski, here's a player that is ready made for them. It would be an awful move. It should not happen, but it wouldn't surprise me all the same. I just with Lewandowski, he's such an elite level footballer and Europe will recognize him. But does he have a brand in America or China or a big place that Barcelona will get revenue from in the way that Messi did, for example? That level of footballer and the way that Barcelona have structured their club for a long time, and Real Madrid, to be fair, with the whole Galactico era, that doesn't seem as apparent now. And all of a sudden, the biggest names in football are in the Premier League consistently, and they cannot afford to bring them over. Could Barcelona have put in a bid for Salah this summer? That would have been their global brand, but not a chance. Whereas 5 years ago, Liverpool would have been sweating over that contract situation with him because Barcelona could have come in. That I don't know what they're doing. It seems they're still somehow signing good players, though. Rafinha is a great signing. Koundé would be a great signing. Frank Kessié is a great signing. If it cost them De Jong and Gavi in the process, you wonder whether it was worth it. But I don't know. They just seem like they're ready to fall apart now. And I kind of, as a neutral, wouldn't mind watching it after the whole Super League debacle.
Yeah, I think you do feel a sort of a sense of, well, you have this coming, don't you, really? I think Real Madrid have come out of it better than they could have hoped. They've got some fantastic players and they've got Carlo Ancelotti as well, let's not forget. So they're in a great position. I think they will be as long as they've got that stability. But Barcelona, seem a few steps away from implosion, it seems. But we'll see how it plays out. Frenkie de Jong still up in the air about going to Manchester United. I've heard reports today that that's pretty much over the line, but we've heard that a few times.
Yeah.
So If Frankie goes, if Lewandowski comes into Barcelona, it feels like a few moves can happen. I think even Barcelona, or sorry, Bayern Munich are waiting for Lewandowski to just go so they can start their transfer business in earnest as well. You said Matthijs de Ligt is probably on his way to Bayern Munich as well, which is going to be a good move for them. But yeah, it all hinges on Barcelona doing their business, which is bizarre, isn't it?
It is bizarre. Frankie de Jong is obviously the one that we're most familiar with at the moment because it just seems like it's going to be the story of the summer. I'm still not convinced it will happen. I still have a feeling that he won't move. There was talk that Chelsea were trying to hijack that deal as well and trying to get in there because de Jong was having reservations about joining Man United, supposedly. The talk that I've seen is Man United and Barcelona have agreed the deal. Personal terms have not been agreed because De Jong still wants to stay at Barcelona. I honestly think we could go through the whole summer with that being the case and United not signing the midfielder. But again, then what do Barcelona do? Because then they've not made the money that they clearly need from somewhere. At some point, you're going to have to make some player sales. You're going to have to look at the models of Benfica or Dortmund and how they're just constantly are producing these young players and selling them on. Barcelona have the potential to do that, but don't have too much pride to do that almost. I don't know. It's the whole thing seems a state. And I think the fact that the Frenkie de Jong deal hasn't happened already tells you what a state Barcelona are right now.
Yeah, the ongoing to United makes perfect sense for United. Of course, it does. It makes perfect sense for Barcelona. But like you say, De Jong himself is resistant to it because he joined the Barcelona dream. That's what he wanted, wasn't it? And a lot of players follow that path. But United, either way, have still only signed one player on paper. They played Liverpool in a friendly and won 4-0 in that game, quite convincingly. But Liverpool, let's just say, changed their team about three times over throughout the 90 minutes. So wasn't the sternest kind of test, or wasn't like the truest reflection of both teams. But did you see any of the game? Did you notice any changes or differences in the way they played since Ten Hag's first games happened?
I was surprised by the formation a little bit. That hadn't changed from their first lineup in particular. And seeing Fred and McTominay start in midfield together just makes me laugh a little bit at this stage. But it worked well. Fred's goal was beautiful. Really nice finish. I think there was a couple of things that I would be encouraged by. It's a pre-season friendly, so we have to just throw that out there as an outlier that there's not a lot you can read from it. But seeing Anthony Martial play and look quite effective and quite fluid with Rashford and Sancho. That looks encouraging. I mean, as soon as Ronaldo sorts himself out and inevitably ends up staying at Man United, which I think there's no conversation over whether that will happen or not, that will limit whether that front three gets to feature a lot together this season. But it was nice to see that work. Obviously, it looks like Sandro Martinez is coming in as well. That looks pretty much confirmed now. We're still waiting on Christian Eriksen, and they will affect that team quite a lot. I wonder who it puts out. That's the biggest thing. Obviously, Ten Hag, we've seen a lot of footage of him in training this week, and he's saying all the right things. That's encouraging. He then says, I'm going to keep Maguire as captain. And I actually think that's the right decision, but then spends 50 million on another centre back. Now, Maguire, remember, is a 75 million centre back himself. So keeping him on the bench long term seems a difficult decision. So if you're
Well,
spending.
it seems like Ten Hag is keeping all his options open. I don't think he's closing the door on anybody. And I mean, the game we've just seen is kind of proof of that. Anthony Martial was pretty much out of the door. He was a bit part player at the end of last season. I honestly didn't know where he'd end up or how much for as well, because his value was diminished that much. But he was a different player in this game. And I think the coaching element of United has been gone for a few years now. But it actually seems like the vision that Solskjaer had, but was not good enough to execute it, is actually happening, because the team that he started with Ten Hag was essentially Solskjaer's platform. You know, the front three of Martial, Sancho, and Rashford was exactly what Solskjaer wanted to play all along. So it was just making that work and making that happen that was the challenge. And then obviously Ronaldo was the spanner in the works, because we shoehorned him in. So without him, we looked a little bit more liberated. So it does raise questions about where Ronaldo fits into a team that plays the way that United did against Liverpool, because their patterns of play were really intricate. They did press a heck of a lot more. And Fred and McTominay, for all the slating they've had over the last few years, Fred looked like a different player, like a real genuine box-to-box midfielder. So there are flashes of hope there. I mean, there's a few United fans getting absolutely carried away, as United fans do on the back of pre-season results like this. But yeah, encouraging, considering we've not made any meaningful signings apart from Malacia, who did play pretty well actually. It looks, optimistic for us, which is rare. I'm not used to feeling like this. I don't want to get too carried away, you know?
It's just a funny one with United this summer, though, because going into that Premier League season, I don't think Ten Hag will want to work with that entire squad. I think it's way too big in some ways, considering it needs additions. United have got themselves in a really difficult position where they pretty much can't sell anyone. They can't sell Martial, for example, because no one will take his wages. If you the level that Martial is at right now, who can afford him? Eric Bailly needs a move away. I mean, he played in this game and looked good as well, to be fair, but there's a lot of talk that he's looking at a move away. I think he was even linked with Fulham, which I think would be interesting. How will they afford that? They just could not afford that. Jones is still there. They're never going to shift him. I was really surprised that Andreas Pereira's got a move to a Premier League club, to be honest. But this is Ronaldo as well. Ronaldo might say, I want this move. I want to go. Where? Who wants Ronaldo right now? And that seems such a bizarre thing to say about probably, I still think the best number nine in world football right now. For what he is able to do, he's incredible. But the money that it would take to get him away from Man United, apparently a club in Saudi Arabia came in for him today and offered 125 million a year for it. And he said no, obviously. United, I've got so much work to do still. But I'm more trusting in the fact that Ten Hag will get that work done than I have been of any Man United manager since, well, Mourinho, I trusted, to be fair. But the last two didn't have a play.
I think I'm almost resigned to the amount of signings that Ten Hag makes being quite limited. I feel like he's going to have to coach the players he's got for the most part. I think he will hopefully bring De Jong in. I think he's kind of the centerpiece of his plans coming together. But beyond that, I think he'd be fairly satisfied that he could coach the team that's already there. Because we said last season that the team that finished second the season before that should be doing well. They should be pushing for more than what they got in the end. And I still think that's true. There's a lot of issues with morale. There was a lot of issues with player unity, but it feels like a lot of the players that were disrupting that unity have now since gone. So it's just a case of getting the morale back up again and finding a coaching system that works. And the problem with United is they've got so many different coaches that have influenced their signings over the last 10 years, the way they've been playing over the last 10 years. So if they do go for Ten Hag and say, right, we're going to give you a chance to have a style of play and players that are your players, they've got to see it through for a few years. Otherwise, it's going to be the same pattern repeating over again. So fingers crossed that this is the start of a bit of trust in a coach for once, you know?
I think so. I think realistically, I think United will come away from this summer with Malacia, Lisandro Martinez, Christian Eriksen, and a reserve goalkeeper because they have obviously let Dean Henderson go and Tom Heaton's getting older. Lee Grant's gone, I think. So they're going to need a reserve keeper. I've said before, I'm not convinced De Jong happens. If that doesn't, will we see United scramble in the last week or two of the window to bring anyone else in? There's still talk of Kani Chukwuemeka from Aston Villa being linked with Man United as well. Gerrard's left him at home as they've gone to Australia on their pre-season tour and said there's been a contract offer on the table since October. He's refused to take, he's, well, he's not refused it in quite so aggressive terms, but he's not signed that. So Gerrard said, I think it's better for him to stay at Bodymoor Heath. But Man United are apparently looking at 20 million for him or Newcastle as well, along with Barcelona, of course, and Dortmund. So maybe United might take a punt there at bringing a midfielder in. But I don't think, in theory, United shouldn't need a lot in this window. You, like you said, 2 seasons ago, they finished second. And then they brought in Varane, Sancho, and Ronaldo. That is a dream transfer window. Now, I think Ten Hag was the addition that they needed this summer.
Yeah,
Probably
it's
holding
weird,
midfield.
isn't it? The
But
biggest piece of the puzzle all along was the coach, wasn't it? And we all knew, and we said repeatedly, Solskjaer wasn't good enough. So maybe we've got an actual coach now who can get something out of them. Fingers crossed. But in terms of the transfer window elsewhere in the Premier League or in Europe, if you like, anything surprising you so far? Any transfers that have caught your eye? Any teams doing good business? Any teams suspiciously not doing any business and making you worry about them?
Well, one comes to mind immediately when you say that. Leicester, I really worry about Leicester. Still no business. I saw today that they are being linked with Jan Bednarek from Southampton, which is hilarious because they stuffed 9 goals past Southampton and then signed Vestergaard and they're now looking at their other centre back. That's not enough for them at all. That would be a really disappointing signing. Leicester worry me, definitely. Leeds continue to do great business. Tyler Adams, I think, will do really well there. And I think we mentioned that last week. So that's strong. Everton are still quiet.
Yeah.
Really, really quiet. And considering that they only just stayed up, they've got to pull their finger out at some point because they've also lost Richarlison, whose goal has pretty much kept them in the league. There's got to be some work done there. I don't know. Other than that, I think it's more looking across Europe now. Some of the bigger names that are looking to move, like we talked about De Ligt from Juventus. Scamacca is still available. There's a bit of a tug of war going on, apparently, between PSG and West Ham.
Yeah, West weirdly. Ham
more money in than PSG will be, which seems odd, but PSG are finally learning their lesson. I saw something earlier about all the players that PSG have left behind and not taken to their pre-season. And some of the names on that list are phenomenal footballers. And it just says how much depth PSG have got and how they need to shift some of them. So Wijnaldum's not gone. Ander Herrera's not gone. Julian Draxler's not gone. Mauro Icardi's not gone. And Kazawa not gone. Wow. There's 5 players there. How many Premier League teams would those 5 players not get into? It's interesting. For me, the biggest thing this week was Roma went on their pre-season tour. And all the footage of them originally had no Zaniolo in it. And a lot of Roma fans were panicking or saying, good, get rid of him. And there's been a bit of a divide on Twitter and across different platforms of whether they want him to stay or not with his comments lately. And then they played a preseason game against Sunderland the other day. Mourinho ran on the pitch halfway through because he thought Sunderland were being too aggressive. And Zaniolo scored. So clearly he was there, which is nice to see. They're now looking quite likely for Paulo Dybala as well. Is really exciting.
That is exciting. Yeah, that's next level business for Roma as well. Impressive.
It really would be. There's a few players knocking around Italy that are still available. Obviously, Belotti's still not got a club. I wonder whether he might make his way over to England as well. There's a lot of clubs looking for a number 9 right now. So why not someone of his sort of pedigree? Bernardeschi looks like he's joining Insigne over in Toronto as they build an Italian empire there. But I think that's the other thing that I wanted to mention really quickly, the MLS. It just feels like the MLS are kind of trying to move to a next stage as well. So they've just got this, I think it's a 10-year deal with Apple for the rights of their games, which is really interesting to see them broadcast on a streaming service. Obviously, Wayne Rooney's just gone back as the manager of DC. Really interesting to see that. I mean, it's only a couple of weeks since he quit Derby and he's already in a job. Not necessarily the job that I thought he would go for. I kind of assumed he would stay in England, but fair play to him. Bale and Chiellini in LA, Insigne and Bernardeschi in Toronto. There's some big names getting to the MLS all of a sudden. And I think with the World Cup being in America in 4 years, it's quite good timing and quite smart from them to try and get a bit of commercial revenue and interest in the league, no?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. They need it because they've had cycles of big players coming in, haven't they, over the last decade, 15 years or so. But it's been quiet on that front in the last few years, hasn't it, since we had the likes of David Villa playing there and Frank Lampard retired over there. So, they needed a bit of stardust, didn't they, really?
And actually, when you look at Bale's age, there's no reason why he couldn't play in the MLS for 4 years now. So it's and Insigne is a perfect example. That's not a retirement. Right. Not yet, anyway. He'll be there for a few. And Bernardeschi as well. There's a few years in them yet. So that's a really good investment in the league as a whole. And if you think that we are starting to get a bit more American talent, we talked about it briefly last time. Jesse Marsh being an American manager in the Premier League is a massive statement. And he's obviously brought a couple of American players there as well. We've talked before about Christian Pulisic, Weston McKennie. So it seems like America are trying to finally crack the soccer market a bit more, which I'm here for. I think it could be a great development, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree. It'd be good, especially with the World Cup on the horizon for them. So yeah, definitely. In terms of Premier League, I am interested to see what Newcastle do beyond now, because they've just obviously finished the signing of Sven Botman, which they've been chasing for a while now, haven't they, since they came into some cash. Yeah. So if they get any more additions, that'd be interesting to see how they develop, because they could be a comfortable top 10, top 8 team if they get the right person in next.
Are you surprised by how quiet Newcastle have been so far?
No, because I think they realize too much change is probably going to be counterproductive. It's a lot of balancing of a delicate squad, isn't it? They've got a few big characters there already, and I think they integrated a couple last transfer window, one of them being Kieran Trippier. So gradually they're bringing in some quite big names. Well, not even big names, quite household names, like Nick Pope's a household name, Sven Botman's a relatively up and coming name in Europe. So they're not going to rock the boat massively. And I think that's what they're trying to do, really, keep it progression rather than, complete revolution, which is the wise thing to do, I think.
But their forward line is terrible.
It is, yeah.
I don't think you can overlook that. And the fact that they've not brought in someone, particularly on the right-hand side, really surprises me. I think last season they lined up with Ryan Fraser there for most of it and Miguel Almiron. And I saw something the other day that between them, they registered 3 goals and 3 assists in the Premier League last year. So you've got St. Maximin is outstanding. Callum Wilson is a good striker, but is very injury prone. Chris Wood, it's nothing special, is it? So
No.
then where do Newcastle get their goals from next season that fly them up the table? Because they didn't score a lot of goals last season.
Well, saying that, if they signed an out-and-out striker that was proven at the top, the highest level, that'd change the dimension of Newcastle's season completely, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think they're
Maybe
getting
that's on the
priced out.
horizon.
Not priced out, sorry, but I think they're getting kind of people are asking for too much from them because they know they've got the money. Apparently, they were looking at Moussa Diaby from Bayer Leverkusen and also Alexander Isak, and both of them have fallen through. And they've said, no, we're not going to put the amount of money that those clubs are asking for in there. But that's what's going to happen. I think Newcastle are going to find it harder than they thought they would. So maybe they are doing it the right way, bringing in Eddie Howe, bringing in players of Nick Pope's sort of level that will improve their profile first. But I remember when QPR had a lot of money. They
Yeah.
couldn't get their names in either. So we'll see.
Another one that I'm really kind of thinking they should have kicked on this summer, and hopefully they do pull something out of the bag, is West Ham, because they were on the periphery of like breaking into the top six almost permanently. And they've been pretty quiet on the transfer front, haven't they? They signed Areola, I think, from PSG on a permanent basis for 10 million or something like that. And they've just signed Agüero from Rennes for 30 million pounds, who's relatively unproven, I think. So, yeah, weird one that.
Tends to work out though when you bring centre backs over from France, to be fair. They're well equipped in that league. I think the main thing is they still don't have a backup to Antonio. So if they can sign Scamacca, that would be outstanding business. I think it's inevitable that Jesse Lingard will end up there as well. That'll add a little bit of depth. They're going to hold on to Declan Rice and Jarrod Bowen. That's probably the best business they could have done this summer. Although there's a lot of talk that Thomas Suchek is available for about 30 million because he's not signed a new contract. So that would be interesting. I wonder whether West Ham just haven't really got the money to throw at it this summer. Missed out on Champions League and Europa League qualification. I don't know. I think that they
Maybe.
might have hindered themselves a little bit there, but we'll see.
It's getting competitive around that sort of just below the top six, isn't it? Sixth to 10th now, with Newcastle improving, Villa improving. You'd imagine it's going to be really a tough scrap to get anywhere higher than eighth next season, you know?
I like that though, because for a really long time, there were really clear divides in the Premier League. These were the top six, these were the middle sort of five, and then you had the clubs that were going to battle for relegation, and everything was almost, you could move people a little bit, but it's pretty much decided at the start of the season. This season, I think you've got City, Liverpool and Spurs, Chelsea, and then anyone else. I think Arsenal are the best of that bunch right now, but obviously they've got European football to contend with. So that just throws a bit of a spanner in the works. You'd imagine Man United would rise to the top of that as well. But again, new manager, a lot of competitive games. Everyone else actually seems at quite a good level all of a sudden and might
Yeah,
offer a
definitely.
bit more competition. I hope we see the end of 100 points a season for two clubs. I don't want to see people getting near that mark. I want a Premier League champion to get 82 points because the league is that competitive and it's not a runaway. So I think this market could still be interesting.
Yeah, I agree. I think it makes the importance of getting the transfers right this summer and every transfer window from now on so important, doesn't it? But that's the key, I think, and we'll see what developments happen in the transfer market next time we talk on the pod as well. So stay tuned for that.
I just think as well, just to link it back to what we were talking about at the start, I think obviously a lot of big signings happened early on with Darwin Núñez and Haaland, but not a great deal else is happening in England right now. I cannot believe that Sterling to Chelsea wasn't a bigger public deal. Maybe it's because we knew about it for a while and it was quite clear. But that's such a high-profile signing.
Massive.
I feel like not much was made of it, no?
Well, we did. We put it top of our agenda today. So obviously can see the importance of it. But yeah, you're right. In terms of like, this should be headline news across the world. And in England especially, this should be our prodigal son, our most talented player at the moment is Raheem Sterling. He's going from one massive rival to another in the Premier League. Why is this not bigger news? You're absolutely right. But maybe that's just
that's just the way that the transfer window works now, where because everything is so available on Twitter and because we knew about Sterling moving to Chelsea for weeks before it happened, it just didn't cause much of a stir. But it almost went under the radar. So that first picture of him in a Chelsea shirt, it was like, oh yeah, hasn't it been there for a while? It wasn't really a thing. I wonder whether if Frenkie de Jong does sign for Man United, it will be a thing. When Eriksen does, I imagine we'll all go, right, we knew about that 3 weeks ago. But I'm surprised that there's not bigger profiles around. Maybe that's just Twitter is ruining transfers.
Maybe. I do think there's one big transfer waiting somewhere in the wings and we don't know about it yet. Fingers crossed. It'd be nice to see that, wouldn't it, in this transfer window? Just something massive to take us all, take our breath away.
Well, the talk of Antony has gone quiet, I noticed. Yeah. And if Man United are in direct contact with Ajax at the moment about Lisandro Martinez, I was surprised that that wasn't being mentioned as well. And Neymar's future still seems a bit unsettled. Real Madrid missed out on Mbappe and haven't got a replacement, which I think is really interesting. So, yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe we will see one more big deal.
We'll see. Well, next week, mate, hopefully you'll join me for us to talk about the transfer window yet again. And also, best of luck to the Lionesses and the Euros. Yeah. Doing really well so far. Have you seen much of them so far in the tournament?
I saw an 8-0 win, which is just absolutely outstanding. And then, obviously, I think it's Northern Ireland. Is it tonight as well?
Interesting
tie for them. So yeah, it's fantastic, and seeing the attitude around it is brilliant. Seeing the fact that the people are really getting behind women's football again. I mean, you see Jordan Henderson turned up to Liverpool training in the Lionesses shirt. It's a nice touch. I like that, and it's good that it's getting the recognition. And the Lionesses are doing so well too.
Yeah, as a father of daughters as well, it's nice to see like representation on TV because they're all on terrestrial telly, aren't they? So free to watch, which is great. So yeah. Best of luck to the Lionesses. We'll probably talk about that in more depth next time as well.
Yeah.
But until then, thank you so much for watching. Please do subscribe to us on YouTube if you can. It's so easy to do. It's free. And if you're on Spotify, please follow us. Give us a 5-star rating. Get us promoted as much as you can because we are seeking to grow. That first 100 followers we get would be amazing. We're on about 60 at the moment, so we're getting there slowly. But any support you can give, massively appreciated. Until then, Miles, thank you for joining me, mate. Pleasure as always. Speak to you next week,
See you later.
Cheers, man.